Welcome to Things They Don't Tell Black People About Law School. We are two first-gen cis Black women who became friends while attending a T20 law school.
We're here to share things that we wish we knew or things that we wish people talked about when we were in law school. This is just our perspective based on our experiences. We are not attorneys, and our podcast discussions should not be considered legal advice. Always consult a lawyer for your individual circumstances. So, on today's episode, we're going to talk a little bit about how to thrive during your summer internship, specifically in big law. But some of these skills can be applicable to summer internships anywhere. So, let's get started with talking about I guess the difference between or like kind of the experience between first year and second year big law internships or internships and kind of how to navigate that all. So, I think one of the biggest pieces of an internship or any job or any experience, especially in the legal field, is networking. So I think you're pretty good at networking.
Me
And I think
too.
you have, thank you. I think you have some really good strategies and like ways to like connect with people or like build relationships that can be fruitful, for your career. So let's talk about that.
If I'm being honest, I hate networking. But I think I had to be good at it because of my previous job in sales. Like it's almost, I would describe myself, I know you might disagree, as an extroverted introvert. Like sometimes at networking
I
events,
do disagree.
I have to go sit in the bathroom by myself. And I also for like minutes. But I also think it's like a mask that I put on. So it's a skill that I've had to work on over the last decade or so. But it's not easy. And I know a lot of people experience social anxiety around networking because it's so transactional. And especially if you
Yeah, extremely.
authentic interactions with people, networking is the complete opposite of that. But I just try to think of it as like an opportunity to actually learn about someone and what their interests are. And it's less about, I don't approach networking from a what can you do for me? And some people do, and that works for them, and that's fine. But when I network, I rarely, and maybe this is good or bad, I rarely talk about myself unless asked. So I'm more so like curious about the other person. And networking, I guess at Big Law, for me, it was more so just talking to my peers because we had a massive orientation. Our class size was about like seven. No, I think it was between like 70 and 90. And I know that's a big gap, but that's about the size of it. So we had like a massive orientation and we were all crammed into this one room. So I was just like, I'm just going to talk to the people at my table. When I network with people, I'm asking them questions that are more so about like who they are and how they kind of arrived at this juncture. Like, where are you from? How do you have ties to the city? What practice group are you interested in? And I think it's because one, I have a hard time talking about myself unsolicited. But that's the kind of approach I take. Well, how do you approach it?
I think you have to think about it, or I have to think about it when I'm entering these situations with like two ideas in mind. One, for the most part, people who are in like networking situations are either in two camps. They really love talking to people and networking, and they're there willingly, or they're forced to be there just like I am. And so it's you have to think about it like that. And most of the time where you're talking to people who like already work in the legal field or like have more experienced careers, they're there because they want to be. The other thing I always think about is the fact that like the best way to network to me or like to have like memorable experiences is not necessarily or and when I say memorable experiences I mean experiences that'll leave people wanting to like know more about you or like wanting to connect with you further is like you said sometimes talking about like work stuff if you're it's something you're really passionate about or something you know a lot about that's good but I have a better time connecting with people, but also like weeding out who are good people that I should connect with by like just talking about like pop culture or like things that I'm interested in or things that they're interested in that like might be pop culture wise. Like I have had experiences where I've been at like lunches or dinners with like partners and we just talk about like some random show that they're watching that I've never heard of, but they're really weirdly passionate about it. And I leave like learning something new and they leave like learning something or, and they leave like having shared this cool passion that they love or whatever. And I always like, I'm a reality TV junkie.
Oh,
So
same.
I always find that like, talking about reality TV is sometimes a great start because you'll either be able to connect with that person because a variety, like, don't let stereotypes fool you. A variety of type of people like reality TV. And so you'll be in situations where you'll like randomly be talking about, or like they'll be like, oh, my partner likes that, but I don't really watch it, blah, blah, blah. And then I'll be like, well, I got a tip for you to like get in good with your partner on this. And
Yeah. Oh, that's cute.
or sometimes you'll find people, because like I don't enjoy necessarily being around or like connecting with people who are like judgmental about it. So like if I like talk about it and somebody's like, oh, I would never, I'm too good for that, then I'm like, oh, it was really great to meet you, and like maybe continue the conversation a little bit further. But I'm like, that might not necessarily be a person that I can vibe with because they're not necessarily open-minded about things. Like the fact that
Yeah.
it's reality TV doesn't matter necessarily. It's just like they're not open-minded about things. But I think just going into networking, understanding that like not every conversation's going to be great. But there are opportunities to just like navigate it and like kind of make it fun. But I think one thing we might need to talk about when it comes to networking is Black women specifically. I don't know if you've experienced this, but especially like before you go to your firm, but even sometimes after you get to your firm, unfortunately, there may be situations where you experience like micro or macroaggressions in the process of networking. Where people might make strange comments or say something, or you make a joke, especially when there's like drinking involved. You know, people might make a joke or something, and those are sometimes really jarring and like out of body experiences almost when they happen.
Yeah, and I'm always caught off guard, and it's not specific to like networking exactly, like even in the classroom or anywhere I'm at. Usually
Yeah.
I'm in my head thinking about my day and the things that are going on in
And
my
then
life,
boom,
and then
racism.
somebody just comes up, and I'm like, and sometimes I freeze, and it's not because I'm like hurt, it's just like, hey, like I was actually thinking about I gotta walk this dog that I'm watching in 2 hours, and he hasn't eaten his breakfast, and then you come over here being like, oh, like you're educated, and it
Oh,
almost it.
or like, do you know your dad?
Oh, don't get me started on that one. Are
You
all
know,
your
but
do all of your siblings have the same parents?
exactly. It's just,
But
it's those little things.
and that's happened before. I realized we just kind of jumped into it without saying much about like laying the landscape. So
Oh.
we both have interned at big law firms,
Firms, yeah.
big, that sounds so weird. Big law firms. Is it big law firms or big law firms?
Law firms that are considered big law
There we
firms.
go. I think mine might be on the cusp of mid-size, but regardless, the class size was like pretty big. They take about like close to
I
90.
think it varies per firm. Because,
I was just saying
yeah, okay.
my
Oh,
firm
sorry,
takes
sorry,
about,
sorry.
no, you're good. Takes about like 90 summer associates, but that is across the nation. In some of their larger offices, it's about 40 to 50 summers, as they call them, summers. But we're going to be talking about our experience for 1L and 2L specifically, because I think 2L, and I think you might agree, 2L was completely different. And 2L is actually when I faced microaggressions, and I have a feeling that it may be because I was returning, and maybe that some people took that as like a certain way, because I had already been there and there were familiar faces. And I think some people, when they feel, I don't consider myself to be threatening, but when some people feel threatened, they lash out. And I think my 2L is when I felt more microaggressions.
I think, yeah, I think it's, and I didn't mean to correct you on the class size. I just wanted to let people know that like some big law classes can be so much bigger. There are some big law firms that have like, I don't know about anymore because of like market stuff, like but I think they used to have like up to 200 summer associates at some firms, not in one office but across the firm. And then some firms are a little bit smaller, and more, just smaller depending. But the big law connotate like moniker is weird because it's like you said, you don't know if it's big law for you or not. Me either, technically. But I think it's just I consider anything that plays market rate to be big law.
That's a good way to test it.
And
But and we
so
both got paid market.
I think just to let the listeners know going forward, that's how I'm defining big law is a firm that pays market rate.
And we should actually, at some point, we should talk about money because I was alarmed to be like, oh my gosh, I'm making $11,000 after taxes. Great. Because I went from having no salary job, well, to having like a summer internship, but that was great. But we can get to that later.
Yeah, I think we definitely should though.
But I think back to microaggressions, one instance that really stands out is I was at a networking event. So I don't, at our firm, the first week is actually orientation for all of the associates in the country. And everyone from all the offices comes. And it's funny because the individual who made the comment was actually from, well, was working in my office, but I was just like, oh, it's really cool to be in this space. A lot of people have wanted to be lawyers since they were like born, or like not born, but since they were like really young. And I had made a little joke. I was like, some people come out the womb with a gavel in their hand. And this woman was like, oh, even at your school? And we go to a good school. I had no idea where she went. And just turns out it wasn't like that much higher ranked than our school. But it caught me off guard. And I was like, why would you say that? Like, we are just having a
I
conversation. And
think
I,
that's the perfect response.
but I was like, yeah, I was like, I don't think, I think regardless of where you go to school, like, people have always wanted to be in law. And some people at the table were like, yeah, I totally agree. Like, I don't think it matters where you go to school, like, you're in law school. But, and people were kind of like trying to counter what she said. But that was such a weird thing. I was like, what are you trying to prove? Because honestly, if you think that your school is that much better, we're both at the same firm and we're making the same salary. So like, does it really matter? But stuff like that, I was just like, why? Why?
Yeah, and I think that it, and like you said, it's like in a moment where you're just like living, existing, doing it, and you're like taken out of it. And so I think a good response that I've tried to start doing, if I can remember, is just exactly what you said, like, why, oh, why would you say that? And not like in like a way that's like combative in any way or even matching their energy in any way, but just like immediately being like when someone says something like, oh, even from your school, just being like, oh, what makes you say that? And like I have been able to do it a few times,
It's disarming.
and it really does take them back, that person, and make them like question and be like, not necessarily question why they say it, but makes them see the ridiculousness of the statement.
Or
Because
explain themselves
And
too.
which also brings out the ridiculousness of the statement. And it takes the work off of you to like just swallow that, because that's what they're used to. People who do stuff like that, they're used to you just like swallowing it and being like, okay, well, and like trying to change the subject. But if you make them like sit in it, it allows you to be free a little
Yeah,
bit.
I love that tactic. And I think it's hard, especially in a group setting, when you respond with that kind of kindness. It's hard
Exactly.
for them to look good. And it's interesting because
Exactly.
I wonder if people who behave in that way are trying to make themselves look good at some of the expense of someone else. But I think it goes back to, what we talked about last episode, like the competitiveness. That doesn't have to be there. Like, we're not, at least in my summer experience, we were not competing for positions. And I'm very grateful for that. And I
Same.
understand that some firms, not everyone gets an offer, but that was not my experience.
Yeah,
It was
absolutely.
yours to lose. And I think we've actually talked about this before.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's a great point. And I think we say all that to say like networking, I think a lot of people look at networking and they're very much like, I don't know what I'm gonna like this is annoying. I don't want to have to talk to you. I hate small talk. A lot of people hate small talk, which I understand because small talk can be very draining, but I think there are unique ways that you can look at it and like make it your own and make it personal. And one thing that is great about like big law firms, but also just like if you're networking at like events or you go to like a job fair or something, if you hate networking and you hate it, just like think about the free stuff that you're going to get out of it. Like, if that pen can motivate you, or if that nice lunch or nice dinner can motivate you, or if you wanted to go grab a coffee, but you didn't feel like spending your own money to grab a coffee, like, just use that as an excuse to motivate you to like want to network with people. Because I think we've talked quite a bit about like more formal set up networking environments, but when you're doing a summer internship, you also have to cultivate those old your own more informal or more you have to have a little bit more kind of gumption to go after networking opportunities with other people. And
Especially, or if I
go
may,
ahead.
especially like associates and partners. And I think we've been talking about networking among your peers because it is nice to like have friends in the summer. And honestly, in my experience, that's how I got some of the good lunches. Or people would be like, hey, I had lunch with
Exactly.
this like really great
Yeah, you
partner.
want to hop on, or
So I think.
we got tickets to this show. Like, do you want to come?
Yeah. So don't, I would recommend not being, or that no one should go into the summer internship dismissive of your peers, because your peers are, and in some instances, depending on where you're at in your internship journey, you might be working with these people. And it's good to have to know, like, I guess to your point, not everyone you network with is going to be a pleasant interaction, and you don't need to like everyone you work with, but to know, like, okay, if I have questions about, or if I need to like hand this off to someone further down the line, like, who can I contact in these different practice groups? So to keep that in mind. But I love the transition to like reaching out to associates and partners, because those are really the relationships that I think made my summer experience. How about
And
you?
those will be the relationships that best serve you, at least as you're starting out your career. Absolutely. Because I have spoken, I don't know if I've spoken about this on the podcast, but I was speaking to someone about like networking and like building like a essentially like building like a, and this has come up a lot. I've heard this recently on like a podcast and stuff, but essentially building your own board of directors. And the idea of you as a person, you should try to cultivate different people is in different parts of your life as your board of directors. But since we're talking about like your career specifically right now, you'll need different people to serve different roles in your career. You're going to need one person to serve as like an advocate for you. You'll need a few people to be able to advocate for you and say, oh, this person's great. But you'll also need, oh, go ahead.
I want you to go into that more, like, because I think it makes sense to us because we've been in the corporate environment, but like, what is an advocate in a corporate environment? What do they generally look like?
And so an advocate can be, and I think sometimes, especially as a Black woman, it's really easy to try to look for a board of directors that looks like you. And it is great if you can build a board of directors that looks like you, but sometimes the members of your board might be completely different from you. It might be an 80-year-old white man from Iowa who you all build a connection and he becomes a part of your board of directors. So I would say don't discriminate as you're building your board
100
first.
percent.
And don't walk into it assuming that you can't build a connection or find a resource in someone. And so what I say when I mean what I mean when I say someone who's your advocate, that's someone who, so I guess I should lay out all of the board members first so I can
Okay,
compare them.
sorry.
No, you're fine. I just was thinking about what how best it sounds. You need your advocates on your board. You need your mentors on your board. You need your peers on your board. And so what I mean by an advocate versus a mentor, because I think they sometimes get confused, which is why I was like, let's talk about them together, because a mentor is there to give you advice. A mentor is there because they've either been in a similar situation or they've seen people in a similar situation and they can give you advice for how to go through. The difference between a mentor and an advocate is an advocate may give you advice, but an advocate is more interested in propelling you forward. and helping you make those moves.
I would also say for me, an advocate, I know that my advocate is in rooms that I can't be in, primarily because of like
Absolutely.
their position in the firm. And that may be junior associate, maybe not so much, senior
It's usually
associates
seniority
and
or
partners.
exactly. Exactly. And that advocate is that person who is in rooms that you are not in, but is bringing up your name in those rooms. And it's people, and it could be, when I was at my firm for the summer, my advocates looked like a variety of different type of people on a variety of different types of things. And I always say the best way to find your advocate is to do good work. Because no one wants to advocate for someone who's going to embarrass them later. So if you maintain
It's a
a strong,
referral.
exactly. So I think it's like maintaining a strong character and maintaining a strong being and also doing good work when you get out there in the workforce or you get assigned an assignment, like especially in a summer internship at a firm. Depending on how your work is assigned, which we'll talk about a little bit later, you might not be able to choose who that first assignment comes from. But if you do an excellent job on that first assignment, that person may be your advocate for the rest of eternity. And it's really important to have that board. And I feel like I'm missing some other members of the board. And if I think of them later, I'll mention them. But it's just really important to be able to identify as you're networking people who can serve the different needs of your career for you. Someone who you want to model your career after, someone who they give sound advice. And so I think it's just important in networking to keep those things in mind. And like we both said, have an open mind about who those people might be.
Yes, and I can't agree with that more. And not to get too specific, but like the most, I think the reason I picked my firm is because it was diverse in the way that I needed it to be. And it stood out to me like there was a partner, and he, I would describe him as the complete opposite of me. So I'm from,
The Midwest.
yes. I am from the Midwest, and I went to a PWI, and I am used to very fratty, like plaid white men. And I would describe this partner as like that kind of guy. And I would say in my college experience, like me and that person, like there was just, I would say I, because I went to a PWI, I was like, I didn't have a choice, but they just never took an interest in me. And he stopped by my desk. He was like in the intern area, and he was like, "Hey, do you want to grab lunch?" Yeah. He's like, "Do you want to get some oysters and some martinis?" And this is the kind of man who has his initials embroidered on his pockets of all
I
his shirts. And I was
love that.
like, sure. And I loved that because I wasn't in his practice group. I didn't have any work with him. And he just saw me and he's like, "We're going to hang out." And it was one of the best lunches I had ever had. And to this day, I still feel like I can reach out to him and ask him questions. But like, I think it's hard because, partners aren't, sometimes they're not the most approachable people, but don't rule anyone out because you think that you might not have anything in common with them.
Exactly. And I think that you are really good at this motto that I've learned to adopt, which is like, they can only tell you no. Like, and if they say anything beyond that, then you might have grounds for a lawsuit. So, like, that's great too. But they're probably only going to tell you yes or no. And so like you said, don't look at anybody as unapproachable or unreachable to or like, have a fear that like it's just gonna go so disastrously wrong that you're just like never gonna be successful. Because if somebody doesn't want to grab coffee with you, they'll say no. And if they want to grab coffee with you, they'll say yes. And most people, especially in a law firm where people are working on billable hours, they're not gonna do something they don't want to do with their billable time. So I would just say, approach it with an open mind, an open heart, but with wisdom and skill.
Yes, and tact. Like, be
Yes, tact.
tactful.
Yes,
Like,
that's very
that
important.
is because I know we've been talking about more senior levels, and I think that those are good people to have in your wheelhouse, especially because they know the inner workings of the firm. Like, partners are literally partners at the law firm, and then you have your mid levels or your seniors, which are more senior associates that are like if they aspire to be on track for partnership or just have been at the firm for like usually like at least
Five
five
to seven.
years. Yeah, I was gonna say 5 to 7 years. But don't overlook the junior associates. Honestly, those are my favorite people sometimes because they are one, they understand the budget that you get for coffees and lunches. And like one of the juniors was, she was probably like second year. She was like, yeah, we got $75 to spend on you guys anytime we take you outside of the firm. So we would go to coffee like twice a week and we would just grab every pastry possible and we would sit down. Honestly, we ran out of stuff to talk about. So we did start talking about reality TV. But juniors are fun because they're like, this is free money that I just get to hang out with you. And juniors, the stakes are lower. So they're living in the trench. I call it the trenches, you know, as trenchy as Big Law can be, but they're living in the trenches. So they can actually tell you, this is my workload. This is how many weekends I have to work. This is my relationship with the partners. These are the practice groups I interact with. They're like super open about it. And they can talk about the transition from going to law school, from law school to being an associate, which I really appreciate because I want to know, like, did you have work right away? How did they start your workload off? Because I'm very, you know, this is like my second career, so I'm very practical. Like, what is my life going to look like? And they're so
Absolutely.
coming. And also, they love these free lunches. Like, they get $75 per head. That's a lot, especially if we're going to Nobu. Sorry, I just have to slide this in there. If you end up at a fancy restaurant, Nobu has a bento box lunch special. I recommend doing family style. You get to try more things and the bento box gets played out. Because like I'm not, it's not like I can afford Nobu on my own, but I just love that. But yeah, I would say don't neglect junior associates and they can point you into the right direction.
Absolutely. And when I say your board should contain junior associates. Your board should contain everyone. And I think I also want to mention other good people to network with who are often, unfortunately, overlooked. And you might not think of it as networking, but the support staff. I am a firm believer in making strong, natural, caring relationships with the support staff at the firm as well, because those are the people who know the schedule of the people you're trying to get in touch with. Those are the people who know how to connect with people. And also, those are just good people to know. They know where to go to lunch because they book the lunches. Like, it's just, they're really good people to know. And sometimes it's just nice to be able to talk to someone not about the law because they don't necessarily want to talk about the law, you know? And so I would say don't underestimate the importance of connecting with everyone you see at the firm, because I think a lot of people, especially once you're like in law and depending on your background or like you're like, I'm making this amount of money, but I think that you need to remember to be, I don't know if humble is the right word, but just you're
I
not
think
better
it.
than having a conversation with anyone and connecting with anyone and building a relationship with anyone. And I think that it is often overlooked how important it is because, like paralegals who work at the firms, when you don't know what you're doing, you know who does know what they're doing? A paralegal. And you know who's willing to spend time helping you is a paralegal who's working at your firm. So I think it's just important to connect with everyone and build. And like last summer, I, you know, started hanging out and like going out with some of the paralegals at the firm. And it was like really cool. And they're really cool people. But also, I got to learn like another aspect of the firm business that I didn't necessarily understand as well, which some firms, if you're interested in being partner track, it's not just about knowing the firm, the work, but it's also knowing the firm business.
And I would say I can't agree more on like the support staff because my firm specifically let it be known like we will talk to the support staff and see how you treated them. They were not interested in hiring people who had the better than mentality. And also,
Exactly.
like, I
And
just
that's
so
good.
we had assistants. I loved my assistant, like, she served a bunch of other people, but I became like friendly with her because if we were away from our desk, we were supposed to tell her that we were away from our desk, and I just be like, "Hey, I hope your day's like the small things. Like, I hope your day's
Exactly.
going well. I'm just letting you know I'll be gone for this amount of time." And it got to the point where I found out like my firm had like tickets to things, And she'd be like, "Hey, do you want these two tickets to this like front row seat at this event?" And I'd be like, "Yes, please, thank you." So they'll do kind things for you. And again, it's not super transactional in nature. I think she was just doing it because she wanted to be kind. And at the end of the summer,
Exactly.
I ended up getting her a gift because honestly, like she was so helpful. But I think
Exactly.
something else I wanted to touch on is I didn't have access to paralegals. But use the firm's resources available to you. They'll probably give you a plethora of resources. And even though law school, you have to pretty much do everything on your own, at the firm, they are paying you to think about like critical issues. If you need to like run a document to someone else to proofread, like some people have resources for that at their firm. Feel free to do
Exactly.
that. Like they
Or
have
even like
a
a Westlaw
librarian.
search. Like, I did not know. I guess you're not allowed to do this in law school, but you can call Westlaw and they'll do the search for you. Like, you can
They'll send you
literally,
the search terms.
exactly. You can literally just tell them, like, this is the issue I'm trying to solve. Here are some of the terms I'm thinking about, and they'll send you a full search. So it's like you are on billable hours and you need to be efficient with your time. And because of that, there are resources available. You just got to find them. And that's why, to bring this full circle, you brought up a great point. That's why networking is important, because networking is your way to make your life easier. It is a way to find the solutions to the problems that you might be facing.
But you are responsible for your work product. And going back to your like first point, the firms expect good work product.
Absolutely.
Do you want to articulate like some of the expectations you ran into around work product?
Yeah, I think it's just like no one is. I think the most important thing to understand, and this has been very hard to understand because I think most law students, or a lot of law students, are either recovering or not even trying to recover perfectionists or type A personalities. And what that creates is a group of people who are expecting to create perfection for themselves. But you have to understand that for the most part, firms are not looking for perfection from you, because why would they expect you to be able to produce the work of a lawyer when you've never been a lawyer? What they are expecting for you to do is to be able to solve problems and to be able to put forth good effort. So, for what I mean by that is, when I say they're not expecting perfection, I don't mean that if they tell you to put together a memo and there are a bank of memo examples in your firm's drive, they don't expect you to put together a memo and say, okay, I think this is what a memo looks like. They expect you to go through that drive and say, these are what some memos have looked like in the past. They expect you to have your product proofread. But if you don't necessarily have all of the right terms, or it's not necessarily in the right order or something like that, they'll be forgiving about that if you show discernment and work on actually putting the product together.
In my experience, there was a huge emphasis on not having typos. They're
Yeah, oh,
like,
absolutely.
we understand that, and also putting, like you said, a good faith effort, but it was conveyed to me that there was no tolerance for typos. So avoid typos. And that's
Oh,
why I say like
absolutely.
use a writing center. But yes, you are being paid to like think critically. So like, pay, not pay, but maybe have some call Westlaw, have them do the search. But when you find your cases, your memo is like clearly laying out whatever you're being asked to do.
Exactly. And has strong analysis. Like, I hate to bring up IRAC, but working at a law firm is a lot of times the analysis and the conclusion part of IRAC.
Yes. And also so I like to submit my work early.
Yes, and that is a great rule of thumb. You should always submit your work early. You should never submit your work late. And if there is an
Never.
inkling that you may be late, you need to communicate that 2 days before you're late.
And I'm gonna go like, so I think we jumped like so let's talk about the assignment system specifically. So my assignment system was a rotation, which means that, well, this was the first 1L, it was a rotation. So they asked us what we were interested in, we checked mark that, and then they gave us three practice groups, but they let us know, they're like, if you want, you can seek out work from other practice groups while you're in one rotation. And me being who I am, I was like, when I got my first rotation, I was like, this is okay, but I'm going to network and actually ask people, hey, what are you working on? Do you mind if I shadow a call? So I wasn't giving myself work, but I'm like, I get to shadow this call. And part of that was like, this is getting a little off topic, but I promise it'll come back. Part of that was taking notes. I take really good notes. So when someone's on a business call and they need to recall specific dates that they promised to have deliverables and names, I would type up my notes and I'd be like, hey, thank you for letting me shadow the call. Here are my notes from the call. And it sounds tedious and not useful, but I had partners remember me specifically because they said, anytime you were in the room, I knew that I would get notes after and we would use your notes to recall dates. And that
That's
made me
wonderful.
feel good because I was just taking notes because that's a way of me staying like active. But they like take notes. And also, I would recommend anytime you are meeting with someone, maybe not depending on the thing, but if you're getting an assignment, bring something to write with. If
No,
you show up empty-handed, they will think that you are not taking this seriously.
I think you should take the caveat off of if you're getting an assignment. Anytime you're meeting with someone, bring something to write on and to write with because it could turn into something.
It
You
is an
just
impression.
always need to have something because when you show up to meet with someone empty-handed, you look empty-minded.
Yes.
And
And
you
some
need to
people are like, oh, I retain like everything that I hear.
no.
And I think that's an amazing skill. But the perception is that you're very laissez-faire and you don't care.
So I think that's excellent advice, and I just want to take that caveat off of it. I think you were on it when you said
Thank
bring
you.
it at all times.
But I wanted to go into the assignment meeting. So in the rotations, we were assigned like, hey, here's the juniors, partners, or like seniors that you're going to be working with. Reach out to them to ask for your assignment. I would reach out to them ASAP. I basically had a template. I'm like, hey, I'm looking forward to working with you. When is a good time to meet to talk about the assignment? So it showed
Absolutely.
like some I guess gumption, but
Initiative.
initiative. Thank you. Gumption wasn't the word. But so when I would meet with them, I actually had like a mental checklist, or I would sometimes write it in the margin, but I made a note to all, and these are things that I recommend everyone do because I got really good feedback at my end of summer reviews. I always asked what, like, well, they'll give you a brief, like, this is what we're working on. This is the assignment. I would ask them what format they wanted the work product in. Did they want it in
Absolutely.
a memo? Did they want it in an email? Because some partners or seniors are always on their phone. So if they say they want it in an email or that they're going to be looking at it on their phone, be sure that the email that you're writing is formatted for phone. Don't write them like 8 paragraphs, 7 sentence thick paragraphs about the information. Bullets are great. I would always ask them, when would they like it by? And they would give me a date. And I would say, well, if I give it to you earlier, would you be able to give me feedback on it? So then they'd say, like, yeah, I would actually love that and try like different iterations. And then I would ask, are there any phone calls correlating to this specific deal or thing that I can attend to get like a better idea? And they would say yes or no. And then I would ask them, who's junior on this? Who can I reach out if I have any simple questions? And then they would give me advice on that. And then I would ask them, what's the best way to contact them if I have questions? I think that's a big one. Not everybody likes emails. Some people like phone calls. But if you
Absolutely.
don't ask for the deadline, that is a flag. And unfortunately, I don't think this happens everywhere, but I've heard that some people will not give you a deadline just to see like how you behave and how you act.
Exactly. And I think that your list is perfect. I think that it is exactly what you need to ask when you're going into these meetings. The only thing I would add is if it's like a specific type of thing, like they're asking you to like put together a certain type of document or disclosure or something, I always asked, and they liked when I asked this, what is there a template or is there a client that you've done this for in the past that you like? So
I
like,
forgot
for
that one.
example, you do in summer, I would do like some like more like project management work, like where you're kind of like managing like all of the trackers for like, let's say it's a closing, a deal's closing. You as a summer associate might be tasked with like keeping track of all of the documents that need to be signed and how they need to be signed and what's going to be in the closing or whatever. And some people like a certain type of project tracker. So I always would ask, What type of project tracker do you like? Can you give me a client that you've worked with in the past that you like their project tracker? And then I can take the initiative on my own and go into the system and find that tracker, you know? Or sometimes they'll be like, oh, I got it right here. I'll send it to you. But either way, that way you know you're sending them the product that they want, as opposed to trying to play a guessing game. Or so I know some people will go around and ask other people, but I always think it's better to ask the source.
Yeah, I think that's really good advice, especially asking, like, it's essentially asking for examples. Like, do you have examples of what I should look at? And also, asking, like, any number that you need to reference it. And maybe that's what you're mentioning too, but like
Exactly.
a reference number, however your firm like tracks that in a database, because then you can go into that larger file and look at all the things and be like, oh, okay, this is where the deal is at. You also asking like what stage of the deal or what bigger picture, if you are really interested in a practice group, showing an interest in the larger deal phase or like the big picture lets them know, like, hey, like I'm not just thinking narrowly. They want to know. Most people want to know that you're thinking like big picture. What is this? Where does this fit in?
Exactly. Absolutely. And my advice would be all of the questions that you just mentioned, have those prepared and ready before you even go into the assignment meeting. And at any point there's a question you forgot to ask that's important, go ask the junior person on the job. Don't go back to the partner with a question about like examples. If you forgot to ask it in the meeting, go ask the junior person on the assignment and or junior person on the deal or on the team and say, what do they like to see? You know, like it's kind of like a one time, one and done. In most cases, there might be some exceptions, but when you're dealing with a partner, you kind of got that one shot at asking all those questions. And then if after that you have more, unfortunately, you probably need to go to the junior first and feed it up.
And write all of your questions, like try to get all of your questions
Exactly.
down. It's not like
Exactly.
a
That's what I say.
text
Coming
thread.
prepared with it. Or
Even with
if
a
you've been
junior,
com
though, it's not
exactly,
like a ping
exactly.
pong match. Like, don't go
Exactly.
back and forth. Like, if you were like, okay, I have this question, even maybe get started a little bit if you can without answering your question to feel like, okay, I'm gonna have these
Exactly.
other questions too.
Exact. That's great advice. Get started before you start asking, because I think the most important thing, in addition to producing great work, like that's the most important thing. The second most important thing to like success is respecting people's time. And so I think that it's very important to respect people's time and understand how to put together a work product.
I agree. Something I did want to touch on just briefly is like experience in practice group and in practice groups. So like I said, I was able to try out practice groups other than like what I was given rotation. And that's actually how I found the practice group that I chose. So I recommend if your firm gives you flexibility to try out different things, don't limit yourself to what you have been assigned if you have the option to go beyond that. Because I wanted to find a practice group that had work that I was interested in and was like intellectually stimulating and also a team that I would want to work on. Something that I learned about, and I think maybe most corporate groups work this way, but corporate junior associates work late because the partner is having the meeting in the beginning of the day. Then they're
Exactly.
assigning the work to the mid-level or the senior, and that's happening late morning. So then the more junior associates are getting the work after lunch, which means that you have about 6 to 8 hours worth of work after lunch. And
And it
that's just,
also, oh, sorry. I was gonna
I
say, it
know
also
I'm
depends on time zone. So, like, if you are working, if it's a junior associate working with a European client or a West Coast client and you're on the East Coast or vice versa, like, that all shifts how a person's work day looks.
Exactly. And if you're into transactional work and you're like totally fine, go for it. That was not for me. Like I wanted something that gave me a little bit more time in the evenings. I also learned that, the transactional group, they worked more weekends. And these are things that you can ask the juniors, like, how many weekends have you worked so far? How many weekends should I expect to work a year? And not saying like I was looking for something easy, but I did want flexibility and I wanted work-life balance. And it's not, at least where I'm at, it was not taboo to ask, like, hey, Do you have work-life balance? And people will generally be honest, but with practice groups in the summer, I would recommend not being distracted by some of the bells and whistles, like
The
fun
shiny
lunches.
toys.
Yeah, the shiny toys and like the like day parties that they may take you to. Day parties isn't a good way to describe it, but there are like a lot of events that go on and different practice groups will host them. I will say, like, obviously have fun, have a good time, eat all the food. I gained 15 pounds in 3 months. It was incredible. But I would also say, like, really think about the work that you're going to be doing so that you're not trapped in a practice group that isn't something that you want to do long term and makes you sad. You're going to be spending a lot of hours at work.
And I think speaking to that also, I don't know if you felt like this, but I found that even within my firm and also like across firms, like having interacted with different people from different firms, certain practice groups have certain personalities. And I think sometimes you might want to pay attention to that as well, because you might want to be like, oh, well, these seem like personalities that I can work with very well, or these seem like personalities that don't necessarily have the like same work style. So I would pay attention to that as you're like, kind of shopping the different practice groups, for lack of a better term.
I say shop around. That's my biggest advice. I think I went a little overboard, because I think I did like work for six practice groups during my summer, and the average was like three, and I did 11 assignments, and most people did like four. So, but with that being said, it did get like my work was out there, and I was like, it was to the point where a partner wanted to work with me that I personally didn't. I didn't enjoy the work. I was like, this is not something I'm interested in, but they were like, I would love to have you on my team. And I really, that was like super, super flattering. But it was nice to be able to know that my work was respected across groups, but it also allowed me to pick something that I really enjoy and love.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's just important to put yourself out there and like get to know. Like, I think sometimes people forget that like summer internships should be approached, in my opinion, is both a job interview where you're interviewing them and they're interviewing you. You need to be on your P's and Q's and make sure that you are appropriate and putting your best foot forward. But also, it's a little bit up to them to be appropriate and put their best foot forward as well, whether that be firm-wide or practice group or whatever, because you need to make sure that this is a place that you want to commit yourself to for at the very least the start of your career, but hopefully for long term.
Go into it, like you said earlier, with an open heart and open mind, but also be sure to ground yourself in like what you're looking for in a job opportunity.
Absolutely. So I think that we have offered a lot. And I think that we will, I think we have so much to offer on this topic that we are going to split this into a two-part episode. And so I think we'll end it here with some great information. And let's just do our little new segment. I kept calling it new because we're like 2 episodes in, 3 episodes in, so we got to keep it going, but it'll eventually stop being new. And we'll eventually have a name for it once one of you all emails us a name for the segment. It's essentially we're going to talk about things that are happening in our world that are legally related that we found interesting or funny or cool or just like wanted to talk about this week. This week, we found out quite a few things, but I think one of the interesting things that's kind of been in all of our social media recently. So there's a restaurant. I think it's in St. Louis, Missouri. I think that's where it is. Apparently it's like a Black-owned restaurant, but that's not why it's been making attention. It's been all over social media and like all of the like national like talk shows and stuff because they put an age restriction on their dining. So they made it where you have to be, in order to eat at the restaurant, you have to be a woman 30 or older or a man 35 or older. And so when I first saw that, I was like, that sounds great. Because I sometimes hate going to restaurants where young people are there. But and I know a lot of older people I was talking to, like my parents and stuff, they were like, that sounds great. Like I but that's like that sounds like a great restaurant. Wish other cities did that. But there are some legal problems with that. Not just like young people being mad that they can't go eat at this restaurant, but there are some legal complications with the fact that there are age restrictions on the restaurant. So I was looking into it, and apparently, if you have like differential like age restrictions for men versus women, you can run into some serious legal problems. I don't know if the restaurant owners consider that when they open the restaurant, but we shall
Doesn't
see
seem
how
like
it
they did.
goes. It doesn't at all, but
Well, the
I
first
will.
thing I said to you, I was like, how did this get past legal? And you were like, they didn't have legal.
Yeah, I just don't imagine that they had a lawyer beyond someone who helped them like finalize the lease on the restaurant, you know? Like, I don't think that there was like a sit down and being like, oh, what are the legal implications of this? Because it doesn't, like, having done law school, it doesn't feel legal right away. But
No.
that's just us. But we
I feel
did
like you
law
would have to
school.
market it towards a mature crowd.
Exactly. Or like there are certain instances where you can do that, but like 30 women, 35 men, that d just didn't sound right, like on
No.
purpose, you know, on like at first glance.
Well, do you want to share what the professor said was interesting about it?
Yeah, there was one professor who I saw quoted who essentially said, a law professor who essentially said that like it would have been fine if they just made it like above 30 for everyone or below above 35 for everyone. But apparently where they ran into legal trouble and where they may run into legal trouble if per se, like let's say a individual citizen or like the attorney general of where was it again? Missouri tries to if that person tries to like sue the restaurant or like hold the restaurant accountable, they're gonna run into trouble. So I hope that that doesn't happen to them. But we'll keep watching and we'll keep looking and well, maybe we'll follow up in months to come.
It's
So
very interesting. Maybe we should fly there and try it out.
he should. I think I don't know if it's worth going to St. Louis for that, but
Can
we'll
you get
see.
in?
Yeah, actually I
Oh,
can't.
it's okay. I'll wait with you
Actually
from
I can't.
the
Actually I
inside.
can't. I can't wait. Well, by the time that I have like the disposable income to just fly to St. Louis for a restaurant, then well, I'll be 30.
There you go.
So thank you all for listening so much. We just wanna thank you all for listening. Again, this is not legal advice. This is not a legal podcast. This is a podcast with two former law students giving some great advice. Our opinions do not represent those of our employers. And we really do encourage you to send us anything you would like for us to discuss or any questions that you might have at twoblacklawyers@gmail.com. Again, the email is two TOW, black lawyer,
TWO. It's okay.
not
I
toe
got
back lawyer,
you.
two black lawyers, TWO, black lawyers at gmail.com.
And though we only talked about Big Law, we would be happy to connect with you about public interest or put you in touch with somebody who knows more about public interest and can speak to that experience because it's important work.
Absolutely. 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 And a lot of the skills and the things that we shared are applicable in any type of law that you're going to pursue. Be good and do good work.
Yes. Bye, y'all.
Bye.